What can be done to grow a spirit of gratitude? Hello and welcome to The Good Word. I'm Dave Thomas, your host for this quarter, looking at the subject of stewardship on a broad plane, as it were. Today we're looking at gratitude, offerings of gratitude, and attitude of gratitude. My conversation partners once again are Matilda Fry and Brant Berglund. And Matilda and Brant, what about this thing called gratitude? There are some offerings in the Bible that are supposed to be out of gratitude. There's the attitude of gratitude. What can we learn? What can we say?
I think an offering, if we make it specific, we have one in Leviticus that is called, in some Bibles, peace offering or thank offerings. It's an animal that was brought without a defect, and it could be from a goat or lamb or any other animal that was a sacrificial animal, and it was voluntary. It was given as a thanksgiving to the as an offering, and then a meal was shared after that
between
the priest and the person who offered the animal. And maybe that is one of the most parts of sacrifices that would happen during the festivals when they came together three times a year.
So this was just a gift offering, I mean, one that we assume was out of gratitude or reflection of gratitude?
Out of thankfulness for all kinds of things that a person experiences and then brings this as in gratitude to God.
Nice. Brant, any comments?
Yeah, when I think about the attitude of gratitude, the heart is grudgingly willing to give sometimes. And I'm curious to see the New Testament using the idea of giving cheerfully, giving with an attitude. Some Greek words that are behind this, eucharisteo, to give thanks, to do so thankfully, which seems to mirror this peace thanksgiving offering of the Old Testament, but also to do so, let us show gratitude. The actual word is charis, grace, charity. Let us give and show charity in our giving. And that sometimes may even go against the natural inclination of the heart. It's an attitude I can have in spite of how I feel about the giving sometimes.
So this harks back to something we said quite a few weeks ago about giving being an antidote to covetousness or to the idea of grasping. And when I think of this, my mind always goes to that story in Luke 21. About the widow, and when I think of this, it's kind of a moving story. And Brant, you're the New Testament person. Take us through the story.
Yeah, sure. This is towards the end of Jesus' life, and in the story of Matthew, it happens while they're around the temple. But Jesus and his disciples are near the temple, and Jesus sees everybody coming in, bringing their offerings. And I've read one quotation from a Mishnaic source suggesting that they actually announced the amount of money that was donated out loud to the temple, and thus the rabbis and the people who came donating their large amounts of money would have this amount broadcast, and they look so good for announcing. And then this poor widow comes. She's a widow. It suggests that she doesn't have any other livelihood. She owns no land. She can't as a widow.
And let's think about widows for a minute here before you go on with the story. You know, that in a patriarchal marriage system, that a woman who loses her father or her husband or her sons is really destitute in ways
she
that
is.
We don't understand.
That's right.
You know, she's left with two options. One is to eke out an existence by whatever means, the other is to go into prostitution. And, you know, certainly the second one is not honorable.
The likelihood of remarriage would not have been good.
You mean even just by virtue of the fact that she was a widow?
Because she's a widow, because she's older, they would not have looked on her as a virgin bride, of course.
Yeah.
And so that creates
or
some
one
challenges.
Who could produce offspring still.
That's true. And so here this
and
woman.
So she is now disenfranchised, weak. She's probably poverty stricken. She has nothing.
She can't inherit
land. She has no
land.
Power. She has no power.
Nope, she would have been. That's why in the Old Testament,
no social standing.
The widow, the orphan, the stranger, the foreigner. These are the people that God cares so much about that Israel was supposed to care for as well. She comes now into the temple, and it says that she gives two coins. How did they know? It may have been announced out loud. Here, all the Pharisees. Oh, 500 shekels of gold, 200 shekels of silver, 2 pennies. Right? She's announced 2 pennies, and. Jesus then commends her. He says, do you see everyone else giving? They've given out of their abundance. This woman has given everything she had, and she gave it to the temple. She didn't go buy a few last ounces of wheat that she can make bread with. She gave it to God, and Jesus commends her for her gift.
Do we have any idea what those pennies were? We call them pennies, but they're not really pennies.
Sometimes we call them widow's mites. I actually have one of these coins that I got in Israel. You can buy them through antiquities dealers. They're probably far more common over there than the antiquities dealers would like you to believe. So you'll pay a pretty penny for a penny. But they're just small coins. They're about maybe a third the size of a modern dime. Just a small flat piece of copper.
Do we know, is it equal to like a day's wage or half a day's wage?
Nothing close. A denarius was a day's wage, and this was a small, very small fraction of that.
Well, reminds me, when I was a boy visiting in England, I was in my great uncle's backyard. The boys were out playing while the adults visited, and I went into the garden shed, and I found on the floor a farthing. Now, a farthing was a quarter of a penny. And being an honest little boy, I picked it up and I took it into my great uncle. And I said, oh, this is what I found. And he kind of burst out laughing. He said, well, son, he says, you can just keep that one. He said, those aren't even in circulation anymore. Hmm. You know, but it was worth absolutely nothing. And so she gives this gift. And why is this story so astonishing?
She gives all she has.
Yeah. Because it's a reflection of generosity, right?
Yes.
Jesus
yes.
looks more yeah. and gives more credence to the percentage of giving than to the than the actual dollar amount. Wow. He cares more about the human heart in the giving yeah. than he does what is actually given.
Mm. Now, isn't this the story where Jesus said that her story will be told wherever the gospel is preached?
Yeah, that's actually yeah. told about the woman who anoints his feet.
Oh, okay.
But yes. this story ends up being told as well. So,
and you know, I wonder, having been a preacher, I wonder how much money has been prompted, how many gifts have been prompted by this story over the years.
It is also an encouragement for so many people in this world who are not able to give in abundance,
yeah.
but who are able to give out of their gratitude and their full heart towards yeah. God.
I remember as a child living in Africa when women would come with a few eggs. Mm. They would come to church with 3 eggs. That's what they had. You know, and my mother would buy them, you know, so they could be transformed into cash, because you probably never used them because they were not refrigerated. But I remember the sincerity with which those were given. It was a powerful thing. What's another story of generosity in the Bible?
A story in the New Testament that has always struck me as beautiful is that when the early church was getting together to share its goods, it says that Barnabas brought land that he owned. He sold its proceeds and he gave it generously, the whole proceed to the believers, so that they could all share together in the wealth that each other possessed. I don't find socialism a great general principle where sin is involved in this world, but the early church very much was a socialistic society.
But I would like to know how that worked, though. I really don't know how to work, because you said they shared with each other. I'm not sure they just all pooled resources, did they? Did they share enough to care for everybody? I don't know how that worked. I don't know if we can know how it worked.
Yeah, I think we'd have to extrapolate some things, and we would certainly get into some speculation. But when we find that the widows in Acts chapter 6 and 7 were cared for, we certainly see that there was a need for everybody to be cared for with the basic necessities.
Yeah.
And it had to be made into a system. It had to be managed.
Oh, yeah, somebody had to manage it.
Yes.
The deacons did that, right?
Yeah.
And that's where the first trouble began. They didn't manage it properly. So. What about the other story about in Luke 7 about the woman who, it says, had lived a sinful life, but they came to the Pharisee's house and she came with this jar, a very expensive jar of perfume. What do you make of that story?
well, if the perfume represents a life of a person who, we talked earlier about bringing our mess, the temple would get messy from the people bringing their gifts and offerings. This woman is bringing a gift that represents the messiness of her life. She was a woman that should not be touched. You know, Jesus, if you knew who was touching you, you wouldn't allow it. She's like an unclean woman. So this jar of ointment that...
But some people read this, Brent, as pointless extravagance. This was an expensive bottle of perfume, and she pours it on either his feet or his head, depending which account you
read. Some would say so, and Judas Iscariot was one of them.
Well,
and
what's Jesus' response?
Jesus' response, she's prepared me for burial. She's prepared my body for burial, which his body was never really anointed for burial because he rose too soon Sunday morning to have the 70 pounds of spices that that Nicodemus brought and put on his body. He never had that opportunity, so the woman did what was not possible for anyone else to do. He commends her.
He never criticizes for extravagance. So, I mean, I think about that sometimes. Does generosity become extravagant at some time, or is there no limit to what might be considered generous?
Considering how much was not given to Jesus in his life that we see, it seems to me it almost makes up for the rest of what he was not given.
But it's also important, I believe, to notice the woman, the person who gave that extravagant gift, who she was in the eyes of the Pharisees in the house, and how Jesus accepts her.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, there was a group of high church officials in Asia, and we were talking, and they told me about places in their regions where you have a lot of prostitution going on, and how these young women give gifts and tithe to the church. They are not able to be members in the church in that in that part of the world, but they support the church strongly by with their gifts, with their money.
And some people don't want to accept those gifts.
And the question comes up: is it right to accept money from that kind of business? You see, here we have a story in the Bible, and Jesus accepts her.
On the other hand, it's interesting that when Judas betrays Jesus, he brings the money back to the temple and throws it down on the temple, says, I can't take this. And they refuse to accept the money back, and they say it's blood money, so they have to buy a field with it. They're no longer even able to use it. Money laundering, I guess.
Well, it's interesting to think about generosity. And I would invite our listeners to think about examples in their own lives where they have been blessed by other people's generosity. If you have met or been blessed by a generous person, it's likely to linger in your memory. And of course, we would be remiss not to encourage the growth of generosity. And you grow generosity by being generous, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you, Brent and Matilda. Another interesting discussion has unfolded here. My thanks to Jared Miller, our program engineer, and once again our thanks to our faithful listeners who listen to us from far and wide. For Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.